Thank you very much for throwing the introduction. I don't know, Mr. Barwada, there are any apologies.
For the committee, we've got apologies from Honorable Sunderbaum. And also, we have received an apology from the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Basha. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me again take this opportunity to welcome both the Honorable Members of the Select Committee and the member of the Portfolio Committee from the NA, and as well as PENSAF and the government officials of the department. We all know that PENSAF is a very important institution established in terms of Chapter 1, Section 6 of the Constitution, with a specific mandate to promote and develop official languages in the country, but also include the Khoi, the Nam, and Sen languages in the process of promoting the use of official languages, as well as the Sen language. But in terms of the public finance management, number one of 1989, the very same institution is sort of ranked amongst the institutions that are supposed to be promoting democracy, that is in terms of PFMA. In terms of PENSAF Act, the amended Act, the very same institution is actually scheduled under 3A as a public institution falling under the authority of the member of executive authority, who is the Minister of Arts and Culture. Now, all these classifications in terms of the pieces of legislation that we have are causing some kind of confusion. And I think at some stage, this issue will have to be resolved so that we know exactly the definition of a particular institution or this entity, so that maybe all the other problems that are there could be resolved once legislation has been put into correct perspective. Now, in terms of the program of the Select Committee for Education, today we should be engaging PENSAF on the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. It is expected of the entities of government to actually come before the Select Committee, if it is the Select Committee, to present these every financial year. Now, what I gathered from the administration of the Select Committee is that PENSAF has not been able to forward the strike plan, and PENSAF has not been able to forward to the Select Committee their annual performance plan. And I want to believe that the Select Committee also must believe that there will be reasons for it. We met with PENSAF this week. There were problems. Notwithstanding those problems, PENSAF did manage at least to submit the strike plan and the APT. But it has not happened at this end. We conduct oversight over the entity as much as we do over the Department of Arts and Culture. We need to know them from PENSAF as to what the problems are that have caused this entity not to be able to submit the APT and the strike plan. Last year there were numerous problems that were brought before the committee. Some of those problems included the fact that the organogram is limited. It is unmanaged. There were issues relating to infighting. There were too many litigations. There were the targets that were set by the entity itself were not met. There were financial issues, there were misappropriations, if I may put it that way, or mismanagement, and the variety of all other issues that I'm not going to mention. Maybe they'll be coming from your side. But all in all, the picture was that there seems to be a difficulty in PENHELP actually executing the mandate that they are given to execute. And the mandate is not for PENHELP. The mandate is meant to ensure that the nation benefits. Government allocation is given to PENHELP with a view to ensuring that the nation benefits from the services rendered by PENHELP. And it appears that there are difficulties. I don't know if they are insurmountable, but we'll explain ourselves, and the department is actually here also. Just explain to us. We are here to seek solutions. There is no entity of government as a select committee. There we just see and fold our arms and look at dying or struggling or being unable to perform because public finances are used to actually cause entity to operate and execute the money. So the spirit with which we are calling you, irrespective of the fact that you are aware that you have not been able to produce your stress plan and the APP, is to get what problems are you facing that are causing you not to be able to do that as per the mandate. And secondly, the wisdom of the committee maybe will assist you in terms of pushing your house in order, because we are not going to sit and fold our arms when things are not going okay. We want to see this entity functioning properly, like all the other entities that come before the select committee of this institution. Having given that background, I will then hand over to PENHELP to actually explain and or do a presentation, whatever you are going to be doing, to the select committee to explain the position. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for inviting us to come back again and present. We were here on the 15th of October, and we raised quite a number of issues. So when you invited us, also again identified some of the issues that we must come and report on. So we really appreciate this opportunity. You know, I think this select committee to us is very important, especially for PENHELP, because the work of PENHELP is not just located maybe one particular department, but maybe another department. Our work here, as you said, is this is a cultural entity, which is supposed to service the country as a whole. And we do have structures, I mean, in provinces that work with local government. So I think this committee is very important to us, because we've got representatives from other different provinces, which I think we are planning to strengthen the coordination with the structures through our representatives in those different provinces. So we really appreciate the input that will be coming from the House. We also feel very much encouraged by the spirit in which you are saying we need to approach this need, that this is a situation that we all need to find a solution. So as I have indicated, that we are here, and what this is how we structure my presentation. It's for the purpose, which is very clear, to report back on the progress, and again to explain on the issue of studies and why it didn't happen. And I will briefly, just to get us together in one understanding. I know you've touched some of this, our mandate. Just, I won't go into detail because it's provided in the presentation that we will circulate. I'll just speak through it. And then, of course, look at the progress that we've made since our last meeting and then the challenges that we have. So, as the Honourable Chair has already indicated, that this is a cultural entity that was established according to the Acts of Parliament. I'm quite happy that you raised the other dynamics of this institution, because definitely it's very confusing whether, you know, how we are described according to the FMA, how we are described according to the Act. So definitely that's an area which we need a solution for us maybe to address something more across structural problems. So these are the provision of the Constitution for Honduras, because we are very familiar that definitely our main function is to promote the development and use of all our official languages, including the Nama, Sen, and all, and Kosan language, which is very important. And again, of course, to promote the respect for languages that are used in this country. They have Indo-European languages that are used here, local, other African languages that are used in the country. So those must really be respected. So this is just the overarching aim. But then we have our respect functions, which is according to the Act.
which we are really, I think the first one is that this Penta, we should be providing the government with advice with regard to legislation, how to implement the current legislation, whether there's a need for other legislation that need to be put in place. So that should be one of the functions of Penta. And then of course we should be also advising governments of state departments, including all the departments at all levels, you know, in the kind of options that they should adopt in terms of implementing mining what is in the country. And then of course the third one, raise, promote awareness about the value of our use of different languages in the country. Promote the development, which I think is the key area. How do we promote it? We don't develop it directly, but we need to create the conditions for the development of those languages that were previously marginalized. Research is also key to us. You know, we should be helping in terms of informing the current state, research surveys, learner surveys that can ensure the status of the use of different languages, which can inform in policy. The promoting of respect for all other languages for the nation there. Coordination of the whole language land, this is the role that the setup should play. And then facilitate collaboration with different structures, government structures and non-government structures. Now, the last two is establishing provincial language committee. So we have this provision, we have already established, it has already been established. In every province, there are provincial language committees that are there. We've got provincial managers, senior managers that are appointed for each province. So this is where we can definitely need to be an interface between government structures and how these offices that are established in different provinces. Then we also have national language bodies. National language bodies, this may appear like the old language board. I mean, previously, before 1984, there were language boards for each language, for each language. But now, with the new dispensation, we have national language bodies which promote the development of languages for each language, including Oi and Nama, and same languages. They also have their own NLU. So this is the context of the issues of lexicography. If the spelling is not right, people are not using the spelling right, if you are not pronouncing some words correctly. So these are the bodies that in different languages must definitely be contacted and then they can deal with the mishaps. Then we have the National Lexicography Unit, which deals with the development dictionaries. Because that was when all these languages were declared official, it became very clear that we don't have to. If we want to use the languages in some of the formal domains, we would need to have dictionaries, and they were not such enough dictionaries for different languages. And the national lexicography units were established to deal with those functions. So I'm just summarizing this. But I think overall, as the chapter has indicated, that the NSA should play a role in the process of democratization. Democratization of language use is very, very critical in the democracy of the society. When language cut across, language determines who will participate and who will not participate, who will be excluded, who will be included. And all those things, I think, is very clear to understand that they are very critical aspects of democracy. But as the chairperson has indicated, that the fifth Penhard was established in 1995, I think the first few 5-10 years, Penta was doing very well, but the past few years, past 5 years or so, this Penta has not delivered on its mandate, and there have been many, many problems. If one can go back when Penta was branched, maybe 2000, one could really see 2005, that there was a time that Penta was delivering, Penta was, spearheading the democratic process, informing government in terms of policy and so on, but the past few years, I think could not really meet that mandate, and that led in 2012 to the dissolution of the executive board, and Penta was put under administration. And the caretaker was appointed, and we, the new board, were only appointed with effect from April last year, and we started, we were inaugurated in July. So we are still, fairly new in the organization. We are hardly a year in there. But when we came in, as I reported in the previous meeting that we had in October on the 15th, that we found that the organization was dysfunctional. There were quite a number of problems that we were supposed to attend to get the organization back to sound functioning. And these are some of the things that I will have to report on, what progress that we made and of course address the issue of the strategy. So I've just included those problems here, not with the intention of repeating them again, but just to put them there because some of the honorable members were not here, so that we have maybe a very informed discussion. So these are some of the key positions, key challenges that we find. I just put them here for the sake of continuity in our discussion. That when we took over, we started here in July, we found that the organization, there was a vacant leadership, the vacant leadership was vacant, the organization was really underperforming, the structure that was there was bloated and it was unmandated, the organization was initially compromised, the strategic plan that was there, that was really not acceptable, it was not relevant. In fact, we were made to understand that since 2008, the organization had never had a fully functional strategy plan. So when we came in, we found the turnaround strategy which was there, which is the board rejected. I will come back to each of these points. There were litigation problems, as the honorable chair indicated. Then the staff, you know, morale was very, very low, and there were a lot of infighting. I know the PPC Committee on Art and Culture even came to Victoria, and then they witnessed what was really happening there, that there were a lot of infighting, and it was not anything nice at all. So we got into that kind of situation, and let me just start with the challenge, the leadership that we deal with that. When we started, there was no CEO, because the caretaker CEO was there, his term came to an end, then we had to appoint an acting CEO. And unfortunately, there was no money, there was no budget to appoint that person, that the acting CEO, it was not budgeted for. And the position of the CFO also was vacant. The CFO was then privately resigned, and then we had to appoint the acting person. So these are the positions that we found. Now, what we did, our aim was to appoint the CEO as soon as possible. But we realized that we were made to understand that position was never budgeted for. So which means that we cannot appoint the new CEO until the new financial year. Because we're not going to be able to pay for that person. And now we delayed the process. We planned that we resolved that we should be able to appoint at least the CEO by end of January, so that by February and March, the person, whoever will be appointed, if that person is to serve notice, that person will be serving notice. And the beginning of February, then the person will be able to take over. But again, we ran into problems, because being there, when I check the office, is there any money to put the address? Is there money to get the board members to meet, to be able to run the recruitment process, to apply candidates? It was clear that there was no money. It was only in January, after our engagement with the Deputy Minister of Agriculture, that the Deputy Minister offered that, look, you need to go ahead with this process, then the Department of Agriculture will be able to fund that process. So that means the process started already in January. Then we were only managed to send out the address in April. Then the procedure was made. So where we are now, we managed to work applications, about six applications, we shortlisted. We're going to interview this coming Friday on the 20th. So hopefully we're thinking if we can address that problem. Because that meant from the beginning, for all the months that we've been there, it was one acting position, acting CEO after another. And finally we appointed Advocate Penny to be acting it started in November and until now. So at least that was a bit of stability, because there was at least one was the acting CEO always there. But before we had people acting for months leading globally. So I think that plan, the progress that was made, I think we are praying that we should get the right person. If we can get the right CEO who has got the confidence that we need, that I think will assist us to address the some of the situation. But this situation is worse in the sense that, you know, other chaplain institutions, all the board members of NSAP are part-time. So I'm the chaplain and I'm part-time. I'm fully employed at the University of Cape Town. I do have to do all my work, and at the same time, I had to oversee the organization. So that in itself, if there's no CEO there, hold strong within the organization that affects the day-to-day program. So we are hoping we'll be able to get the right person to be able to lead the organization. If that happens, we think that will be that will address most of the challenges that we are facing. And then the appointment of the chief financial officer, that will immediately come after we appoint the CEO. So that's challenge one. Challenge two, which I reported on last time, was the structure that we found. You see, when Penrad made a small structure, a national structure, but when Penrad was put under administration, the person who was appointed to oversee the organization appointed, I think it was 49 new staff members. And among those 49, there were more senior managers with the level of level 14 and level 13. So that, if you can just look, this is what, this was not there before. This is just 14 days to give an idea, but as you talk about this. So when you look at this, this is actually which was to be part of the transition arrangement. So my understanding, I don't really understand, because, you know, they were already 70 staff members in the organization. So when you add another 49, that means the staff member the staff component of PENSAR to rise from 17 something to 107 with these whole levels of senior management. So when we came, we say bloated, we try to understand who really authorized this, because we were made to understand that these positions, all these positions were not budgeted for. That was kind of thing. They were not budgeted for. So if they were not budgeted for, who approved those posts, who gave authorization and so on, and the board really had no answer what really happened behind. Because of that, the board mandate requested a legal opinion and give a brief to the legal person to assist us in understanding the status now, the nature. We as a board, is the board bound by those appointments which were made without the board? Remember, there was no board for the 2 years, two and a half years. It was the administrator was put there. Now, is the board now, which is constituted according to the Act, is the board bound by those contracts? So that was what they find out from the legal advice, the legal opinion. And the legal opinion of the board was very clear that no, the board was not bound by those contracts. And the board, if we recognize them, we ratify them. And if we ratify them, we take responsibility. And we take whatever in this position we are responsible. So the board took a resolution in November, the 20th of November, to disregard this contract. They said, we are not recognizing in the contract. And I think that's where most of the problems started, when we took that action. And the members affected, of course, really were relieved from their responsibility. They left the organization, taking us to court. Really, they took us to court. They launched a very urgent case to the labor court to demand reinstatement, but the labor court dismissed that on the basis that it's not urgent. Then again, not a few months ago, there was another case going to the labor court, which also was thrown out by court that on the basis that it's not urgent, not on the basis of merit, that's not urgent. So we are currently having a matter. This matter now is at the CPMA, which the board now is trying to find a constructive engagement. How this matter can be resolved? We know we are dealing with human beings, we are dealing with our brothers and sisters. It's not nice to find yourself in that kind of a situation. But at the same time, we are dealing with public money. You know, how do we balance the two? How do we exercise our principles, values of Ubuntu, but at the same time, how do we run the organization professionally? So that becomes a problem. So the CCMA tried to bridge that gap. We had a meeting with the yesterday. I think there's a panel hearing, the hearing was yesterday, where we're trying to reach an amicable solution. If they could be some conversation or settlement that can be reached. Unfortunately, there was no agreement yesterday. The matter was postponed again. So we are hoping that this process might resolve some of the impact that we are facing. What do you do with or we cannot go on with the implementations of the child. So if that is happen, this is going to assist the organization, because since we took that decision, which were really impacting on the finances of the organization. Now, the organization is able to focus on some of these problems and things to do. So, we are waiting to see what will have the effect on that outcome. So, let me move to challenge three, which was under performance. This was a serious problem. When I recorded last time that when we look at all, I think we got the graphs here, the annual report clearly showed that the organization was not performing well. Because of what many factors, I mean, because of infighting, because of the structure, how it's structured and so on. So the annual report was not very good. And when we appointed the new activity, our mandate was that he should try to stabilize the organization. But the capabilities of the members, you know, we really need to reinforce that. And we established board committees. We have established board committees for each area, so that at least the board members, because of the expertise they have, they should be able to work with some of the managers and try to provide leadership there. Although we are not being directly more professional, but the expertise that the board members have in different areas like philosophy, language policies, and so on, because that's how we've been appointed. You know. So we have established those committees now, which is starting to bear fruit because we have to interact now with the staff members that are there with some expertise that can come from the board. So the actually CEO can maybe add a few things on that is happening. We had our board meeting last week on the when the managers came to us and they reported to us, I said the manager and the senior managers presented to meet the board and that they wanted to do a presentation. And in that presentation they indicated to us that they just want to express to the board that since we still have the situation pointing the CEO is there now, they feel that the situation, the environment now is calm for them and they are able now to function. So they gave us a report on the work they are doing. But their impression was that they feel that now there is a space for them to be able to work from all their various levels. So I think much will come out from the annual report, that what actually has been achieved, which I think the organization is busy touching. So challenge four is the financial problems, which I already alluded to. That is because of the bloated structure. There were problems, shortage of finance. And you know that when the board was appointed, they were not given a budget for the board to meet. We tried to get meetings with that because there was no money for the board to help to get the board meeting. So, if you look at the financial problems, if one just look at the history, going backward, before 2010, we were the acting financial officer. Banks have never had a problem. I think they never had very much of the problem. The report was always, we always get an unqualified report. But I think going back to the 2010 coming on, Banks have been picking up. They qualify. Last year we pick up a disclaimer. That means reporting on the 2 years of the administration. So from 2010 you can see the shortfall that the organization was experiencing until 2014, then that we were short for 14 million. So when we started to find this division, and besides this, we found the organization owing 16 million that we can explain. But this was the money owed to service providers, people who claim that they have services, they're not being paid, so we need to pay them. So we have tried to bring down, that debt to I think 8 million now. It's 2.3 now. So it has come down. So I just want to quickly. So to move on these measures that we are putting down. So we may have to bring down that amount. In terms of starting, as I indicated, let me just go quickly down. The cost of the 44 staff members that were put there, this was the increased payment that came into the budget, about 24 million, 23 million, 190. That was brought immediately because of those appointments. So that means now when those appointments have been taken off, our books. So what it means that now, at least the organization could still have a bit of money which can now go to real programs, not to people. And the problem of course with it was that most of them were not language-based people, we are more management, not language. If it's language-based people, then we can convert their kids into services. that can. But if they are managing them, almost managing, it's very difficult to convert those kids into the kind of programs that we want. So, we, what we're saying, we also picked up that, besides that, we picked up that there are lots of contracts that were entered on, which some of them, I think the things you can indicate, there were no contracts, there were no clear agreements. So, and then of course, this point was also raised by the auditor in Iran. The auditors indicated to us that they have just problems with your auditors and qualify. Some of the procurement of the projects are not, and because of that, they even recommended that they really need to get a forensic audit to get to the bottom of what really happened to the whole process. So that forensic audit has been appointed. We were waiting for the report, which should be there. But what the actual report is, it hampered a lot. I mean, it hampered a lot of contracts that had no basis. And that would take the whole process. After we have eliminated all this, and then the regular appropriate investment expenditure, they demanded not to take up like 28 million when we tried to wait. 28 million is in sales from the process. Some of the business providers are still fighting, but because we've got a ground that is in the contract, we're not paying the money until it's proven that they have a legal contract with the organization. So I'm already thinking about the debt of the organization, only I didn't go to this, because I said we have to pay this up. Contract with the organizations, with the providers. I've also commented on that we were directly that I want to use the piece there. So the project police will assist us, because I think question is everyone. Now, what has happened here? Why money? What is money go to? And you don't want to do it. You have to be commissioned working with the Department of Arts and Culture, a forensic audit that will assist us in giving us information exactly what went wrong, where did money go. So I think early after when it will be in position of that forensic audit report, that will be able to report the certainty what exactly happened during that time. So the challenge that I mentioned is the litigation issue, which has been a serious problem to the organization. I think since 2010, you can see the problem that has been there. We tried just to put a summary, of that period, 2010 to where we are now. What really happened in terms of, there were lots of litigation which took a lot of legal fees. If you can see, 2010, 2011, 6.6 million, 2011, 2012, 4.7 million, 2012, 2.7 million, 2013 and 2014, that was just before we came in, 5.8 million. That went into litigation and fighting that were in the organization, giving that total amount of money. So since we started, we were trying to bring this down, that we were not spending money on that area. But of course, I think we will be slightly affected by the decision that they have taken of the staff members, the members that have disregarded their contracts. That might take a bit of our part. But I think if we are fighting to save 24 million to the other organization, I think to me that will be now, let me come to the problem of the strategic plan, which we need to explain ourselves why, we don't have the strategic plan at the moment. We are supposed to produce the plan. As I indicated, what we got is that since 2008, SRF has never had a normal strategic plan. What that is functional. The one for 2010-2011 was disputed by, I think was thrown away by the Zorg group, which was appointed by the Department of Financial Treasury to evaluate the it was then not ready. So the one that was also developed for 2010 when the board was dissolved. So that one was approved by the board, but it was never approved by anyone, by any other structure. The one that was developed during the interim period, which was called the turnaround strategy to turn around the organization. That strategy was not approved anywhere by anyone. Also, that's why it was not processed. It was not called by anyone. It was not approved by anyone. This implementation was not based on anything. So it was when we took over and we asked the management, the management to provide the board with the strategic plan in July. They gave us a turnaround strategy, which was meant to be the first plan that should go to 2020. The board looked at the turnaround strategy and just said, look, this is not really focusing on the core mandate of the organization. It's focusing on more managerial services. So the board rejected that strategic plan, and we requested the management to rework the strategic plan and then come back to us and with a comment that was made on it. So that was in July. first and second August, just to discuss and maybe what I need to give input into it and send back. Unfortunately, from that point onwards, there was no money to get the board to call other structures. Let me just phrase it here. In the management, there was no clear leadership. There was one member who was acting there as the CEO. So she couldn't manage to get the process going. In October, when there was no CEO, and I was kind of, assisting, we convened a meeting, a strategic meeting for the organization to develop the strategy. It was came very clear from that meeting that there is no capacity in the organization to develop the strategic plan. And we, because of that, we turned to DEC. The rather proposal from DEC that I think the best way to handle the matter, we need to have a turnaround strategy, which was issued by DEC. And that's part of that turnaround strategy. That turnaround team will assist with external resources to develop the strategy using the funding that comes from DSC. Unfortunately, that also did not work. That sub team could not really take off. In January, that one started to do the process of developing the strategy. And that process also was halted because of lack of funding. It was only in April that we managed to secure a PwC to assist with the development of the strategy. And they managed to finish it now in May. We had last week the meeting where we discussed the draft that we have. With the help of PwC, the management was able to develop the strategic plan and also the APC. But those were to be approved by the board. And the meeting that we have now with the board had a meeting with the management, discussed that and make comments. So the PwC is busy now in making those comments. And we are planning a meeting this coming Friday for the board now to approve the project plan and the APD. We have the draft study being complete. But that could not be. So of course the case is why that is not, because that's what you addressed to me, why that has not been communicated to Parliament clearly. That we request that extension, there is that problem, which I really need to apologize for that, because we're not fully in the office. Our understanding was that has been, there has been some communication with the national effect to request for extension through. So I'm told that has not happened. So I just want to apologize for that inconvenience. So where we are now, we're not in the position to be able to tell such a draft plan now, because it still has to be approved by the board. The final session with the organizational structure on Saturday, and the minister also asked to have a look at it before we submit it here. So we will submit it, my colleagues are not here, but definitely it will be too big to be done. So I think in conclusion, what we are saying is that although there's not, there's still much desire to be achieved. The board has tried to stabilize the situation. We are in a position now where we can have at least some, there's a bit of fund now that we can do, meet at the board, where we can fund some activities. There have been some activities. I mean, for example, we're able to celebrate the Mother Tongue Day in provinces, and the managers were able to put up some functions there. We are reconstituting our structure. The National Level Deposit Committees were collapsed. We are re-taking them. The NMU structures also, our dictionary unit, we are working on the memorandums of incorporation and so on. So there is the progress that is happening. It's not enough. I mean, I can't really, it's something that the president keeps me awake, that this is not enough. We still need to do a lot. So I'm confident that working together, the Parliament, DAC, we will be able to come up with a solution that will help to get the organization on its road. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if the actual CEO would like to add anything or say anything before I ask the department to come in.
Thank you very much. I think this person has said it all. I'll assist you during the question time. Thank you.
I advise the department to make comments with regard to whether the entity has been assisted to develop their certain and APP and what guidance has been given and whether a formal apology was conveyed with regard to failure to submit papers.
Yeah, and may I apologize to the board? May I just clarify that issue before the American comes in? Yeah, I think it is important that we say categorically that we have tried to work on our own with regards to this specific plan. And I think it is important also to note that at some point in our life, it depends on. There are some funds which were withheld by one department because of some disagreements which are unrelated to the money of the organization. As a result, it combat our programs in terms of appointing a service provider to come up with the strategy. Our grant is released every month between the first and fourth of every month. For that month, we're told point blank by the department that there are no funds that are going to be released because of those disagreements. And I think it's important that the company should also know about that. I think that is all I can say at the present moment.
Thank you for the service. Over to the department.
Chairperson, the relationship between PANSEL and the department has been fractious and difficult for some time. It is stabilizing now, but we've had some profound difficulties ourselves with regard to the extent to which the organization has, for example, been part of broader sector-wide strategic planning processes, which we started in June. So, what we started in June last year was a series of discussions about alignment across the entire DAC family of institutions, and PANSEL unfortunately did not make itself available for those kinds of sessions, which we believe were facilitative of, to some degree, the quality of strategic and annual performance plans. It was a point at which the organization was not reporting to us at all. And under those circumstances, the DAC started to take some quite drastic actions with regard to withholding subsidies. Already, PANSEL is on a month-to-month, which is something that we do when we're concerned about the extent to which the organization is effectively fulfilling its obligations to ourselves and to the Treasury regulations. There have been ongoing discussions. The Minister met with PANSEL in April, and it was agreed that there would be movement or with urgency to appoint the CEO, which Chairperson has reported on, and the CFO, that there would be ongoing discussions about the dismissed workers because there are a range of concerns about the liability that represents, that it would be the development of an appropriate structure, that there would be regular reporting on issues of monthly management reports, cash flows, and performance reports, that the strategic plan and annual performance plan would be included urgently. At that meeting, the Minister highlighted some concerns about the extent to which we were once again relying on service providers to do our work, but we did see a draft of the strategic plan at that particular session. And that very quickly there would need to be a turnaround strategy. Further, that there was an agreement that there would be a 30-day sort of report back, which had happened not so much in a formal sense, but through informal engagements. And as Chairperson had pointed out, there have been ongoing engagements between our principals and the board. The Minister highlighted in his budget vote speech ongoing concerns about the functioning of PANSEL, and we continue to be concerned about its operations. So we are supporting the organization as best as we can. However, in terms of its governance and functions, that's primarily the role of the board, and the board has, to some degree, created a reasonable stability in the organization, notwithstanding the series of challenges there. And the minister has indicated his intention to essentially support the board for the moment in terms of the its ability to run the organisation. But there are conditions attached to that, which are essentially on the delivery on the key elements that I have raised. The non-submission of the strategic plan and annual performance plan as members of the portfolio committee here will know presented some real challenges in the finalisation of the budget vote, and we continue to be concerned at the ongoing delays in that regard. I'm not sure if other colleagues would like to comment as well, but I think that's a reasonably complete picture. There does continue to be financial challenges with the pencil. In terms of, as the chairperson had pointed out, the prior year debt, the ongoing litigation, and those kinds of things. And those give us real concern about the extent to which performance against this mandate will actually be possible with these outstanding debts still there. We understand that we're making progress in some areas, but we also have the National Language Unit speaking to us directly in some cases, arguing that their resources are inadequate. So it is a very complex environment that we exist in. But certainly, in terms of the budget, the budget that was approved in-house is a budget that is available, and PANSA will have to ensure that it operates within those realms. Thank you.
Any other comments from the side of the department?
I wanted to really to mention the point of the support of the minister. We so far had three meetings with him, and he was quite generous with his time to assist us. So I just want to end that the minister is, we feel that there is a support that is coming from his side.
Thank you. We now go over to the other members to pose questions or comments. Oh, let me just this first go down the tree. Enough time.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I don't know whether I should choose my language.
Maybe.
You know that this committee is dealing with official languages. This what is an official language. One of the 11 official languages. If we are promoting them, because that's what I read from your presentation, Chairperson. But let me welcome the presentation from the Chair of the Board. And appreciate the progress so far, even though we're not here today. It's taking long. Next year in October, this is towards the end of May. How many months? Almost 10 months. Really good progress. Given the challenge that the board is having, one would assume that to move a little bit faster. I am not sure why the CEO was not budgeted for, because it's not a new position. And if it is not a new position, it has to be budgeted for. It's part of the budget. And if it were not budgeted for, the acting CEO, how are we paying the acting CEO? Is it a gentleman's agreement, or how paying him or her or him? The men's world. how are we paying him? It is not an unauthorized expenditure. Getting deeper to financial problems. We need to have a person of that in that position. But my question was on the financial matters. How do we account for that money if it was not budgeted for? The only strat plan, there's no strat plan, there's no ABP. How are you going to get your budget? Have you received the budget already? Yes. How do you get it without strat plan and the operational plan? what are you going to do with that money? Because that is informed by the strategy. Money follows strategy. How much did you get? I don't know figures. What informed the figures that you got? Because your figures should have been informed by your strategy. So I'm very much concerned about the relations between the department and the board or the entity. They're not supposed to have that. But hence you have such problems. In strategic planning, there is nothing difficult about strategic planning. I don't know what it is. It's like you're planning in your house. What are you going to do? How much money do you need? I mean, resources, if I put that here. Why is it difficult when you come to an organization? Because you look at it. Now you're planning for a bigger organization, but the principle is still the same. Out of these 20 people, all of them, there's no one who can do a strategic planning. What level are they? What are they doing? How are they appointed? There's so many questions that comes with that, because that then is the basic thing. You can't, you don't have a strategy, we have no organization. Because we have no reason to exist. You don't know what you're doing, why you are there. Your strategy is your roadmap. On daily basis, when they wake up in the morning and saying we're going to work, what will they do? Because there is no plan. I fully agree with the department. I would have done the same thing to withhold money, in fact everything, even salaries, until when they tell me what they're doing at work. Because we go to account for the money that we spend. The which they used is the PwC price. They seem too expensive to me. I don't know whether because I know strategy for me is a very simple thing really to go to PwC. The department could have assisted so easily because in each and every department there is a strategy or planning unit or MLE unit. Those people are trained as strategists. They could have assisted at no cost. If it means money for accommodation and stuff, you would have just paid for that. Otherwise, they would have done it at no cost for you. But I'm still worried about the officials who cannot come up with a certain. The last thing, Chair, is on the, I'm not going to go to finances because I have so many questions with what are they doing with all these monies if they are not having luggage. I heard the person at the beginning of the presentation that they are working with municipalities. They are there in provinces. I'm sure you remember the chairperson once said, we are representing interests of the provinces. I've not been lucky to come across, whether you're talking local, municipality, or district, because I've served in both levels, or at a provincial level for that matter, provincial government. I've not been lucky to come across. I'm from Pumala. Who? Babu, okay. Where are they? Who is the senior manager there? I've not been lucky to come across them. Maybe I may know what they impact exactly what they're doing, because at times, when it is the administrative council of Lugusa, the premier will invite almost all the entities, even the national government entities. They will be invited just to know what they're doing, where do we meet each other. But I've not been there for the past so many years I've been working there. Where are they? Who are they? Thank you, sir.
I am the founder.
Thanks, everything. Thanks, chairperson of the board and your team. I'm going to ask only one question, chairperson, based on the primary responsibility of the board or of the entity. The language is right. Was promulgated in October 2012, stipulating that all government departments, public enterprises, entities need to establish language units and all these myself language bodies, I think they have given his hand from 18 months from not speaking. And the structure that is overseeing the implementation of this act is both the department and the board. I just want a report on that. How far has this gone? Because that is what you are there for. Can talk about all these things, but yours has this implementation taken place? Where it has not happened, what are the problems? Provinces, municipalities, entities, public enterprises. What are you monitoring? Give us a report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As I'm sitting, I'm a member of government, and if government fails, that means I'm also not doing my job. However, the ANC is taking the whole blame for it. But having said that, my concern is the same as the honourable member who spoke first, and that is, why do you need a consultancy to draw up your strategic plan? That means the appointments that were made, 115 of them, are totally incompetent. They should not have been appointed in the first place. And the second question relates to my colleague, Kaula. Am I correct? Kaula. I wonder if Kaula is on the Northern side. And that is the implementation or overseeing the implementation of the Official Languages Act of 2012 with specific reference to, if I look at the language policy of science and technology, having English isiZulu and Sepedi. Now Sepedi is not even used as a scientific language in Venda. The University of Venda doesn't even use Sepedi, only when it teaches Sepedi. And then Afrikaans for argument's sake is being excluded, and it has scientific language. And the SKA developments are in the Northern Cape, and this is totally ignored, and the people of the Northern Cape are not bearing because they only speak English out to defend themselves. They don't know isiZulu, and they never spoke isiZulu. So again, the question is the same as the Honourable Member Kaula. What are you monitoring there? This is one, this is done one, and there are, I think, only about 20% of the language policies have been handed and developed as such. So there are some serious concerns in terms of your performance and what is happening at Pansal. And then just the one last one question is, your structure is already bloated. You are appointing the CEO, planning to happen on 29th, but in your own document you say that you have not budgeted for a CEO and a CFO. So that will be an unfunded mandate. Over expenditure, so who's going to carry or take responsibility for that?
My idea is just to say, on a prescribed function of your term house, it's based on that one of the things we expect you to do is to achieve the promotion awareness of marketing and marketing. And whilst you're doing this, I just want to
please press your mic.
Whilst you're promoting multilingualism, at the back of the mind is a patent level of disability. I'm taking some language. How have you promoted multilingualism in terms of the radios and all that? We hear nothing in terms of the sign language specifically. Taking into account that we're signatories to the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, what have we done with the sign language in promoting it? And I also want to allude to the scandal that happened with the translation in the funeral, that it was a whole focus on Pansal, and it meant that whoever does not get accredited get to play around with disability, and for me it was a shame on the country. Thank you. Honourable Speaker.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also add my words to my colleagues who have already spoke before me by saying at least we appreciate the efforts made by the board. Well, we cannot shy away from the fact that it's not a good picture that you are presenting to us. And there's nothing that we can do about it, but one needs to appreciate the fact that there is, from the side of the board, some eagerness and vigor to correct some of the mistakes and the challenges that are there. I also want to, two issues that I want to raise. The first one, I think I agree also in terms of the strategic plan. What Honorable Kanini has been saying, I agree fully with that. Because you see, the pension board was actually established in 1995 in terms of the Act of Parliament. So if you look at the history of pension board, already more than 20 years in existence. Now, and 20 years in your existence and you don't have a strategic plan. And I know that most of you are here, you were not here like 10 years ago in pension. You took away from some of your predecessors and all of that. And also because of the challenges that board are currently facing and all of that. But at least there should be a directive in terms of the vision. Where do you want to take the board and all of that? And what is it that you want to achieve? And then also in line with that, to come here and say, no, look, you are presenting to us a progress report or progress presentation in terms of the progress that we have made in terms of the challenges. And then in your presentation, I just see your board resolutions. The board has resolved, the board has taken this resolution. But you don't report to us as to how far you have gone to implement that resolution. No? So it's almost like we are reading minutes from a board meeting. And I'm sorry to put it like that, you know. But in terms of our own interpretation and understanding, you are reducing us, you are telling us, oh, this is what the board has resolved. We have resolved like this, we have resolved like this. It's good to know what the board has resolved. But for us as honorable members, we need to monitor progress that has been made. And for example, if you are saying to us the board has resolved that this is the action that we are going to take to deal with the issue of the protest structure. You need to tell us, I mean, this is how far we've gone. The protest structure, we've 40 people in the program, and then we've taken this approach now, and we've already dealt, you know, just to give us the practicalities. So that's the first thing. Secondly, also, Honorable Chair, I think it's important because in the provinces where we come from, we're also experiencing the same challenges. For example, the province where I come from, all these challenges that are happening at the national level, they are also finding expression in our respective provinces. And it also raises the question, what is the relation between the board and the department? Like, for example, if PENSAL, a Chapter 9 institution of government, will spend more than 20 years without having a strategic plan, then the critical question that comes to mind is that, why did the department also allow it for an institution or a chapter and institution under it, which accounts directly to the department, to continue to not have a strategic plan, for example? Because in terms of our own understanding, the department also is supposed to have done something. I was also expecting it from the department to say, no, look, these are the challenges, the board or the person does not have a strategic plan, but these are the interventions that we have tried to make from our part. And this is some of the support mechanisms that we have tried to also assist the board. So that we don't just leave the board or PENSAL on its own to drown and experience its own challenges on its own. So that we are also appreciating the fact that the department is also playing around in that event. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much for the question.
Honorable
Speaker, I bless you with the cover. By questions by the members, particularly that of the CEO drawing the pillar from the budget that people provide for such a pillar. I don't know how you are doing it. But also to find out, when you have drawn your budget or your APP, doesn't it go via department to ensure that everything has been taken care of? I mean, how does it happen? How do they fund you
if the, your documentation does go by, because I want to suggest that if you did submit to the department, they will get picked up. It's in the organogram, there is a CEO, but there is no provision made for the salary officer. It goes back to emphasize the need for a good relationship between the department and the board. Otherwise, there's a lot of rock that will not be questioned for as long as the relationship is not healthy. Also, the issue of how do you define yourself as a CEO? Do you see yourself as an entity of arts and culture department, or do you see yourself as an entity that is supposed to be reporting to Parliament directly? How do you see yourself? Because that has got a bearing in terms of the relationship that you have with the department. That was the issue that was raised by one of the members of provincial language committees. Where are they housed? You say the fact that it has the post of the CEO, is it not so? On the basis of which budget? Or on the basis of which budget? And who is handling the application? I just wanted to check. Who is handling the applications? Is there objectivity? And what are the terms? How did you craft the advert for the CEO? Thank you.
Maybe I should start with the last question from the Honourable Chair. How do we see ourselves vis-à-vis the DREC? Because I think that's why I think there's sometimes there is a confusion, you know. I think the act is very clear that we are an independent entity. Our budget, our grant is administered by DREC. We deal, of course, with the minister. But definitely we are not an entity of DREC. We are not one, I mean, there has got 28 public entities, and PEMSAF is not. If we do that, that means we won't be able to fulfill our cultural mandate, because now we are a government entity. So it's very clear, I think, you know, the fact that our structure belongs to the Chapter 9, Chapter 10, Chapter 13 institution, and we belong to a forum of the institutions according to democracy, and PEMSAF is treated as that. But if we are part of the department, definitely won't be able to qualify to that forum. Because that forum is there to ensure democracy, to work with the executives, but it's not really under the supervision of the executive. So I think the relationship question that you have mentioned, that is there some chance there is over letting go for that, which and that becomes a bigger problem. And of course these issues of the legislation transmission that we still need to resolve, because if that is not resolved, there will always be this issue. So I only just want to say that this is how we understand ourselves as independent. Not meaning that we don't agree with the Department of Agriculture, but we understand that the Department of Agriculture, they administer our grant, and of course we have we work with the minister. But we are not an entity.
Chapter 1, not 9. My follow-up, Chair. Why is their budget managed by the department? Because it's also, for me, it goes with the attitude. Don't you see that as a strength? They can't just manage your budget. It means something to me. In a way, there is a relationship with the department. If your budget is managed by the department, it means you're accounting in terms of the budget. You can't just go and account for money, you must also account on the problems that with this money, this is what we have done. So, for me, what is the difference between the entities that are directly under the department and yourself if you still get your grant via the department and you must account for it? But also, like I was saying, maybe it's a question of an attitude. Don't you see it as a threat? Where you are weak, you can
it please access the capacity or resources of the department. Because really, if they were independent, the report to direct to Parliament, they would be getting their budget direct to them. For me, it means something that the budget requires through the department.
Yeah, I mean, no, we are quite quite honourable, Jamili, but earlier on I did explain the injunction in the pieces of legislation that affect PENSAL. There's legislation in terms of the constitution, there's legislation in terms of the PFMA, there's legislation in terms of amended PENSAL Act. All pieces of legislation are not really talking to one another, as a result there is this kind of confusion which needs to be just out at some point by the responsible executive authority and the portfolio committee and select committee, the club stage. So it will then strengthen the relationship and the understanding between the PENSAL board and the department. But the relationship needs to be strengthened because it stands to gain a lot if there is a healthy relationship between ourselves and the department. This is our belief. Let me hand it over to you then to respond to the question. Do you want to see something, CEO? I think.
Yes, I think it is important. I hear everyone's member talking about it depends on the attitude. But I think the attitude question should come first. First and foremost, we should understand that where our legislative regime puts us. The sense of the act is clear. I hear members talking about it can't be managed by DAC. I respect some misunderstanding about the way it's managed by DAC. Our act is clear. It says PENSAL shall be funded from funds appropriated by Parliament. So the money that comes for PENSAL to fund PENSAL are held by DAC in trust because PENSAL does not have a treasury account. DAC becomes a conduit. DAC does not fund PENSAL. The money that comes for PENSAL comes directly from the fiscus. Initially, before this confusion came through, PENSAL was getting correspondence directly from National Treasury that your grant, your MTEF budget is this much this time. But it happened that at some stage, the department instructed National Treasury to not communicate with PENSAL directly, but through them. That is the start of this confusion. So once the question of attitude is really important, but we also understand that our legislation, what it says about this relationship. Because if we do that, these relationships which are claimed, which are alleged to be precious, they will be sending out. That's probably the same. Thank you, sir.
Okay, let me then give you an opportunity to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to emphasize that the relationship question, I think, end up should work with any government department. We need to have good relationship with all structures. In fact, I was saying to the board members that what I could see really the future of PENSAL is to be lead in its headquarters. We don't have to have a mega headquarters, structure, but we need to be strong, very strong with collaborations, working with all departments. I mean, DAC is just one of them. But I think the Department of Education is key to our function. If we can't get education right, we can't get, to work with the higher education, right? So that we won't be. There are other structures that we need to do. So I think the issue of relationship, we need to have to work with anyone if we want to drive the mandate that is given to us, including them. So I just want to emphasize that I think I really appreciate that we, for both sides, I mean, take it here, we are here, we are keen to work together from both sides. So there were a number of questions that were asked. I think, Jamili, there are quite a number of issues. Of course, other that issue of budget of the CEO, if I was not referring for the new budget for 2015-2016, I was referring to the budget of 2014-2015 when the board was appointed, that we were made to understand that there was no budget. I mean, it was a shock for the board to be told that there is not even a budget for the board meeting. And then again, we were told that there's no budget, there's no money budgeted for the CEO. Because the understanding was that the caterer CEO was there, was seconded from DSC, so meaning that the money I think that was paid to him was from DSC, not from. So we couldn't even understand what really actually happened there, why there was no such a budget at least for the organization. There was something that we couldn't understand. That wasn't even having a budget as a board. So normally we didn't have a budget as a board until the new financial year. So that's why I think from January our meeting, sometimes we assisted by that, we will ask DSC to assist to fund a board member meeting if there is a meeting to be held, a meeting to be held. So but from our own funding didn't have that.
Why is that today? In other words, the administration, the one that was the administrator,
yeah,
it was put in the place of the board. Was the administrator taking the place of the CEO as well as the board? And as a result thereof, there was no check and balance. I'm getting confused. Can you clarify that?
Yeah. You see, the appointment of the caretaker CEO who was appointed by, I think that's the point of, that was the point of controversy. The understanding was that the caretaker CEO, or the minister was appointed as the executive authority, and as the accounting authority, and the accounting officer, that one person. So that is what we were made to understand. So that means there was no budget on the board. There was no budget board because that person had all the three roles.
That person was the board.
I don't know. That's what we need to understand. The person was the board. But I don't have to get into that. This is what we were told. And the person was the board, was the accounting executive. The person was the accounting officer. One person, yeah.
I'm trying to get the notion of not making provision for board meetings and other expenses, because this was one person. There would not have been any meeting because there is no board. Therefore, no provision was made for expenses of such meetings. CEO, do you want to respond?
Yes, Oliver, let me just start by this question of accounting officer. You see, Oliver's question, in terms of the PSNA, if an entity does not have a board or council, the accounting officer of that entity becomes an accounting authority in terms of PSNA.
My question, why is it that budget did not make provision for this critical area?
Let me say, Robert Chilson, no, the person that CEO was budgeted for. That was budgeted for. But how the entity uses that money when the CEO is not there is another thing. But it does not mean that the position is not funded. The position of the CEO had always been funded. But because of the programs which the service is allocated to, that money, including money that was paid for capital projects, was directed to pay these 49 employees. That is the situation.
We were told that there is no money for, that's what we're told, there's no money for appointing the CEO, there's no money for the community, it was clear. There's no money to budget for that. So I don't know, I think that's what they're saying, that maybe the money, because we came in already in July, so when the new financial year has started, that by then maybe what we're saying is that all the money that was to be used for that has been used up, except the salary. So I think that's what they're saying, I don't know.
Okay, let us not
continue. Well, the issue of financial then, as I said, already I acknowledge that this should have happened, but the reality in the organization is that definitely there was no capacity there. There was one senior manager who was appointed on a contract for 2 years to facilitate the strategy. And unfortunately, I tried to get him to work with to facilitate this. It was practically impossible that he could also facilitate the strategy. I attended two meetings with the staff, trying to get him, to work on the strategic plan. It was very clear that they are going to deliver. When we had a meeting with DEC, that was very awesome. That's why DSC, our concern was that this unless we just have to rehash the old structure. But if we have to reposition the organization back to its commandy, the current structure was nowhere near to do that. Because, for example, when you are discussing the I remember we got stuck with the structure alone, you know, the infighting of the structure. How others would prefer that the structure should be, you cannot change the structure as well. Others would say, no, you have to come with a new structure. So it was difficult for the two parties to, you could see the division even from those discussions. And maybe that the portfolio on the job and they could tell that these divisions are so much that you cannot get those people to produce anything. And again, that would also mean that the board should have meetings. It was difficult for the board just to, there was no money for the board to come together or to have a board there to discuss the issues. So it was a practical problem, financial problem, maybe, and for the issue of capability. So I then acknowledge that we should have, I mean, the organ should have moved to get this done, but it's not. Even now, it's without the assistance of PwC in terms of the ATP, I don't think that the organization will be able to do this, including the staff members that has left. The capacity, the other culture interviewed, I mean, PwC interviewed the senior leaders we're talking about, and their impression was very clear that they don't understand why they call themselves senior managers, because there's no capacity. That's what I also experienced, that there's no way that we'll be able to produce a large plan with the kind of capital that was there. So it has been a problem. Yeah. So I do understand that normally, an organization with senior 27 senior managers should be able to produce a large plan. But this was not the case with PESA. So, now they said, okay, the issue of the PLCs, we have PLCs in all the provinces, but what our need to understand is that those PLCs are not functioning, they're not fully staffed. They don't have staff. You only have a senior manager of the PLC. Those structures are not functioning as they're supposed to do because of the staffing issue. So maybe just one senior manager with the provincial language manager, committee manager, who only has maybe an admin. The capacity of those structures is really not. It's not working. So the NMBs were supposed to be vocal all over, but we were told that those committees collapsed because there was no money going to other structures. The money was going to the head office because of the staffing that was there. So we are trying not to reconstruct those committees. NMBs also have written emails to us that they are supposed to have at least 8 members, each of them, staff members, but most of them, just the editor-in-chief, and maybe 2 members. So all the other structures of PEMSA and were not functioning, simply because there was no staffing, there was no money to run the structure. It's only now that we are reconstituting those structures and getting them to function. But otherwise, they were not able to function. I understand when honorable members in their fields, she has never seen them, she has never heard about them. But I think that will change now with me. So the Honorable Shaula indicated I got it right. Because I speak all the languages. I speak all the Shaula. Shaula. Oh, sorry. No, I was. Because that Shaula is simple. I said it's No, Shaula is not difficult. So, you know, the use of official languages like Tiwala, it's a very good act, but again, I think how it has been legislated, who should be responsible with overseeing the whole process, is very clear from the act that it is the Minister of Arts and Culture who should oversee that whole process, that all the policies should be submitted to the Minister of Arts and Culture. Our role has been that the intent of the process of submission and evaluating is very minimal. All what we would do if we had funding would be to raise awareness about that, to rally, to mobilize around that whole process. But the whole job process will submit whether the even evaluation of those policies, because that is where we need to, when we to start with the minister, that PEMSAs can assist in terms of assisting with the evaluation of the policies, and also maybe in terms of raising awareness, you know, assisting with implementation plans, we might try to, we can assist in that. We still need to find a space where we can go together there. But as it is now, it is the sole responsibility of the minister to make sure that is happening. That's why he reported on the impact in the impact speech. It's a problem. The police are not coming as we have expected. So we have to to discuss with us in culture how we can work together if there is a pandemic in place. So I think all the there were two questions on Yona, so I think that will be covered. And the issues of awareness campaign regarding the sign language. I think sign language is one of the languages that has been marginalized in the country. We, fortunately, we have a board member, Mr. Blosse, who come from Sanda, who is in charge, who's also there. And we have charged him with this responsibility now to work with staff and come up with some kind of how we can really develop, assist in the development of sign language. But again, the sign language is called a national language body. That also look, I think, is sign language. It's not that those structures are not working, but there is a structure that should oversee the promotion of sign language. That, in terms of, you know, the sign language now is a part of the covenant, is one of the home languages in schooling. But the quality of materials, whether there is support for those learners in school, as is the home language, you know, well, that, of course, it should be our responsibility. We will definitely find much on the blogger who comes from the same community or sister in advancing there. So, well, the question of, and we have to understand the concern that we are not providing enough tangible evidence of the progress that we've made. We should be reporting on some of really, you know, concrete, so I really apologize that is really, it's not meeting that level. We do understand that, but sometimes it's because definitely there are no tangible solutions that we've come up with. But sometimes that maybe we unreport it. For example, issue you have reported, issue of fluoride structure. I think what we have provided, the labor interest significantly, that definitely the matter is before the course. So once the course for the CMA resolve the matter, then we will be able to report on something that is concrete. So I might not really detail the whole process of what is happening and so on. So I think I don't know if I've left once any question here. I think I've just noted that as the honourable members were raising, and I think I've addressed some most of them. I don't remember, maybe tell us if I've left any other question.
I think the question about where are the BSC's house.
Yeah.
I think that was a question.
Yeah.
BSC members are not full time. They are members who are tasked to do a particular task at that particular time. So they converge in a meeting at that particular time. I think as the time goes on, depending on what we have, an assessment would be made to check if, for example, they are now presently serviced by the provincial managers and provincial offices. So perhaps we'll see whether there's capacity as time goes on to see if there could be one or two persons that's appointed to deal specifically with the BLCs. But they are coordinated in provincial offices, and there's a BLC manager at head office. Regarding the implementation of water resources as raised by the honourable member, I think the president has captured, perhaps the honourable member has missed it, that when the board has resolved the methodological opinion, it resolved to disregard all the human contacts we have entered into during that 10-hour period. That question has been answered. I'm sure the honourable member has expressed that, as the president has touched on. Thank you.
One question that you cannot answer is, I can say that you are in the process of regularizing the position of the CEO. And my question was, who is actually handling the application? Is it somebody, or is the body outside of the institution, or is it the board itself, or is it the CEO? Who is actually handling the whole process?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The whole process of appointing the new CEO is the process that's been done by the board itself. We only requested assistance with one HR person that we are working with. For the HR committee, then we have put the whole board. Then the HR person is just visiting us that process. The acting CEO is not involved in the process. We are running that process ourselves.
President, you are the last President I have to receive acting CEO regarding this drug plan and the HP. At the position of a CEO, I don't think it would be a major difficulty to arrive at a drug plan and an APP. I don't want to believe that it is so difficult with the human resource material that is there within the institution for the CEO to drive processes such that we arrive at the finalization of the drug plan and the APP. I just wish the CEO to respond to that one.
I want to say, let me start by saying, this process, I started to facilitate this process upon my appointment at ACO in November.
November?
Yes. But unfortunately, for a person, there are competing interests. Because as the person is alluded to, that there are divisions. There are those who saw that this particular program was not supposed to be here in Pesap. And there are those who are occupying those who are dealing with those programs who are trying to serve the asylum. So you maybe can see that there was a complete conflict of interest or competing interest and no progress could be made. And the process of facilitating the process, did start in earnest after the board took this decision. But the problem of our chair is that when you help the board interacting with the department, that the one risk bear to come out of the process, then you as an acting CEO, you find your hands to be tied. Because there was this understanding between the board and the department that there is going to come a task team which is going to deal with the development of the strategy. This task team was meant to deal with the question of irregular appointments of bloated structure and the question of the discipline. But given that the board took an initiative and deal with the question of irregular appointments, there was an understanding that the task team now's duty will be to develop a strategic plan for the board. So I have no role to play. I have to await the process. It is only after realizing that this captain does not get off the ground, then I took charge of the situation. I facilitated that plan. Such that by yesterday, it was sent to me so that I can deliver to the board members a complete strategic plan, which was born out of the process, and which was facilitated by the CEO coming from the inputs of all senior management managers. We came up because even if you can appoint a consultant to come, it's still going to facilitate. The first plan will come from us. It came from us. So that's a facilitation process which came from the PwC. But we provided all that information that resulted in the development of such things. We had sessions that we reported in the 5th of February and 7 and 8 of May. Yes, we gathered to converse at the offices to come up with that document. And then it culminated in its presentation to the board on the 17th of May, where the board made their inputs. Amendments or additions or corrections. And then we went back again for the whole week of last week, from Monday until Friday, we gathered all together as managers to deal specifically with the additions and corrections and everything that's related to the strategy.
Okay, no, thank you. Let's maybe not take the discussion further, but thank you for the clarity that you've given. Because it is becoming apparent that there is capacity to actually develop the step plan and the APP, but I don't know, there are these factors that keep on dragging the process. To the extent that, as I sit here, I'm not sure how we are going to get your allocation, because you get an allocation against the submission of an annual performance plan. That guides whether it is binary or
the Department of Arts and Culture, they need to be guided in terms of what are you going to use the money for. As I sit here, I don't know where they're going to get this kind of funding. I don't know, I don't want to get into it. Maybe they do have a plan. But it's just a question in my mind as to, on the basis of what the commission is said that they're going to agree to have the money translate to an entity or a board or a structure that has not submitted a plan of how the money is going to be used. Maybe the department wants to respond to that one.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe just for the time being, I will not go much on the strategy, but just a concern that I still want to know how much money they are paying to EPWC. It should be expensive, because what he is saying is exactly what he do in the platform. Even if they give themselves, we just appoint a facilitator to get information from the staff. They provide information. To go for such a big organization, it may be expensive. My potential is on the, when it comes from the FQC or that, it was not the strategy per se, it was managing interest. That is part of the job of the leader of the organization. Openly telling us that we don't have that skill. It's part of management skills, to manage interest of the staff. The package. I know that now you're acting, but one would expect, maybe you're acting in a manager level. Even at that level, you expect a person to have those skills of managing my dynamics in an organization. Because exactly what you're saying. That is why you go to a strat plan, because people go there with their own their conflicting interests. So you must be able to manage them. That's my convention. Check.
May I respond, sir?
Okay.
You see, I perhaps it's a fair comment. But I think we should understand the dynamics of PENSA at that time. The dynamics of PENSA at that time were such that I was chased quite a long time. I came back in October. The board was appointed, I was not paid, I was suspended for recent issues of the organization. So I was not paid. I was chased by some of the people which the board has taken against. So when I assumed the responsibility of MCO, the chairperson requested me that I should not get involved in the action of the employees getting to the appointment.
Just what I say. Maybe let us go back a little bit prior to being an acting CEO, where were you? What were you doing prior to it? In fact, prior to being suspended, maybe?
I was heading in the services.
Oh, okay. Sir. Oh, okay, thank you.
I was heading in the services. So that was the situation, you see. So in those dynamics, you tend to take a back seat following the instruction of the board that this is a court matter. Any matter relating to this, take a back seat. And that is exactly what I did. And let me tell you that what the honorable is saying, I've been able to exercise that leadership with the current staff committee of the position. Because it is easier now than it was before. I was not one, as a lawyer, I do not want to be accused of conflict of interest. I think I'll
try. Let us conclude this issue of our allegiance between yourself and yourself. I don't know if the department wants to make some remark on this subject.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just as a point of correction, none of the Schedule 1 institutions have their own vote. They are all funded through various departmental votes. For example, the Human Rights Commission operates, as I'm sure members are aware, through the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. So it was not the department who made that decision, but it was essentially how Treasury chose to administer the funds for Schedule 1 institutions. With regard to the department's involvement in entity affairs, It's obviously a fairly difficult matter because most entity affairs are governed by the board. And so the board has enormous responsibilities, they appoint management. The situation in the case of Pantel over time has become more and more difficult. As members are aware, in any number of terms of ministers, the board of Pantel have in fact been directly dissolved by those ministers who were sitting at the time, and so the story has gone on. I had occasion to go through all the PMG reports a little while ago, back to, I think, 1998. And there were times when Pantel was doing well, where it was functioning exceptionally well. So there have been occasions in its 20-year history where Pantel has been fulfilling its functions and doing so well. Just the last couple of years have been not so good for the organization. So there have been terms, members, where the strategic plan have been in place, where they have been implemented, and where annual performance plans have been implemented. And as Chairperson pointed out, there were many years where audit outcomes for the institution were in fact good. It's just in recent times that it's been going through difficult times. The Department of Arts and Culture's own relationship has been complicated by what Acting CEO and Chairperson points out is legislative issues. Points where we have been at war with one another through lawyers as to whether or not we could or could not intervene, etc., etc. So it has been a difficult and fractious period, but I would like to believe that we have moved beyond that with the intervention of the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the leadership of the new board, because I would agree with the Chairperson of the Committee that's not a helpful situation. So our involvement in the strategic planning across our very large family of entities is, as and when requested, we can and will assist. However, it is not our role and function to draft strategic plans and annual performance plans for entities. What we do is we receive all of them, we comment on all of them, but of course in the absence of inputs to essentially respond to, the department has not had an occasion to comment. With regard to the transfers to Pantel, we are in a difficult situation because the committee is correct. Without planning documentation to outline how the money is going to be spent, how do we transfer? But we have taken an approach to say, because we do month-by-month transfers, and this was a very critical part of the minister's decision to essentially allow the board time to complete these documents, is that we have not withheld subsidy. But we are expecting the documents because we do recognize that obviously there are people that work in the organization that need to be paid, etc. So we have not at this point withheld subsidies because of the absence of the plans. But we share your concern, members, that at this point the funding is not directed against a plan, and that's a very dangerous situation. And obviously further to the discussions between the Minister and the Board, it is also critical that the Department of Arts and Culture and Treasury receive the reports against how that money is spent, how the money is going to be structured, etc., etc. One of the challenges in the past has been Pantel's approach to its budget, in that it has routinely argued that it needs more money, which is the case with all of our institutions, as I'm sure you will hear, and as certainly the Portfolio Committee has heard. But the challenge in the case of Pantel has been that it is in fact planned in terms of its ideal budget, not in terms of its actual budget. So we've seen in the prior year some documentation going to Treasury which was just automatically thrown back because it did not align to the budget allocation. And we're really hoping that this planning cycle, as difficult as it is for the organization, will ensure that those plans meet the resources that are allocated, as insufficient as they may be, and we acknowledge that there are deficiencies, but that is equally true across the entire DSC budget, both as this committee has commented on more than one occasion. So we need to cut the pattern to fit the cost and not the other way around. So we are looking forward to that plan, and there is a degree of urgency to it because we do need to have a sense of where money is going in supporting particular outcomes and targets. Thank you. I hope that that satisfies the committee in terms of questions to the department. Thank you.
No, thank you very much for that input. It is very important. But in conclusion, maybe on behalf of the committee, why would you like to say that? At the end of the day, all things said and done, we need to go back to the drawing board.
and put processes and mechanisms in place, that is going to take cancer back what it was before. We need to perform. We need to go back and look at what is it that they did that made them perform in terms of their mandate that is not happening now. And put aside all other issues, the things, and actually focus on the fact that here we've got a mandate that we need to execute and the nation is waiting for the service for which the treasury is paying through debt. We can't sit with this kind of situation and lament each time we meet their problems that come up. Each time we meet their challenges that are insurmountable. We can't. We've got enough brains. We've got senior managers, we've got staff complements that can assist with the expertise they have employed today to turn the situation around. It all depends on the will. You know, do you want to change the situation or do you want to entertain the issue of attitude, staff entitled, and so on. So that is not going to assist us. And it's not going to assist the select committee either to engage with PenHealth each time there is an engagement in fighting. We can't proceed. We can't produce documents. I mean, when you gave a report for the chairperson, there's a disclaimer here. And I didn't hear the board or the PenHealth explaining how these issues that the Auditor General is raising are being resolved, moving towards a clean audit. That used to be the case years before. And those are the issues that we need to be looking into. How do we turn the situation around? The next time you come before the Select Committee, you bring a report that brings hope that things are really happening. But if you come before the Select Committee and you still cannot produce a threat plan, you still cannot produce an APP, but alongside that you maintain that the situation is getting better, we can't get confused. So there is a lot of work at your disposal, acting CEO. I can see that you're walking on eggshells. You are very careful, right? I appreciate that. Maybe with the law background that you have, but it is also politician. I have a chance. It's full of it is very. My entity is called. You are coming back from me. It's full of it is very. Our eggshells and our heads are not for me as aspects, but still, our money must be easy. It's going to deliver. That is the bottom line. So, if you're better, we can be better. Go back to your institution and ensure that you turn the situation around. And the next time you appear before the committee, at least they hope that you are moving somewhere. I'm happy that the minister is quite close to the board. He's giving guidance. Who there is prepared to come to assistance when you need it, when you put your request. They're not going to interfere. But they wait for you to come to say, here we are staff, please come aboard and assist us and we take the processes forward. And I'll really plead that they just go back and work and give a better report. Better responses, a turnaround strategy CEO, we are looking at you in particular. Thank you. And chairperson, of course, of the board, Baba, we are really looking at you and we are counting on you. We appreciate the amount of what? The achievements thus far, but it is still not enough. We still need to go through much more in order to turn the situation around. And I want to believe that the PenHealth is looking up to leadership. With those words, I want to say thank you very much. And please don't don't be too far from them. Get closer. I know that you say you can't intervene. And this is obvious, but your guidance is needed in this case. We can't remain with the situation like this uncorrected continuously. We have to do something. All of us. With those few, I want to say thank you. The meeting ends.
Then
umsebenzi omningi ayikulo. We are looking at the minutes of the 20th of May, where it was briefing at other local places. So, we need to be the Mohawder. So, we don't have the Mohawder. It was a briefing by the Department of Sports and Recreation on the 20th of May in the very same room. I don't know whether corrections to be made in Quechua. Page 2. Page 3. I seek a move from those members who are present to the second of the meeting. One of the stuff. Are you looking at the minute?
Yes.
Are you moving? Second is all of the comments for one. Thank you very much. Thank you. So the meeting I did. Thanks. Remember, please wait for the finger lunch. Thank you.